This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming Invest Talk podcast.
Let's go talk to Sammy in San Francisco. Wants to know my view on AI stocks in general.
Yeah, thanks, Justin, for taking my call. Yeah, that's my question to you. I mean, I'm seeing all these stocks kind of, I'm a skyrocket, right, almost every day now. But from what I've read so far, I think most of the money is being made by these infrastructure companies, which are trying to kind of sell each other these chips and whatnot, right? The more infrastructure, then the real business use cases, where the real profits are going to come from, right, in the long run. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on the overall AI sector and more specifically the business use cases? I have not seen any company monetize those in any meaningful way so far, but these stocks, like, you know, keep going up and up every day now.
Yeah.
What's your take?
I think it's absolutely a bubble that I can keep going. And to say it hasn't been monetized in any reasonable way, I think that's not true. It has. They are pulling in billions of dollars of extra in revenue. The problem is that they're spending hundreds of billions of dollars now every year to support these products. And you're going to need hundreds of billions of dollars in income to counter. This is all coming from their own regular, straightforward businesses. Microsoft and their subscription 365 business. Meta and their advertising on Instagram. Amazon and their AWS and e-commerce business. This money is not coming from AI. Now, it will continue to grow. I think that's absolutely true, that the revenue from AI will continue to grow. But is it going to take hundreds of billions of dollars in CapEx every single year to support these businesses? If that's the case, then very few of these companies are going to have positive ROIs. And it's going to turn very asset light, high profit margin businesses into very asset intensive and low margin businesses. And maybe in some instances negative. So I'm bullish on the technology and the fact that it will have a lot of applications that will continue to grow. And over, you know, the next decade or two, you'll see some pretty amazing advances. But it's so new, just like the internet was in the 90s, that understanding the business model of it is going to be a challenge. And there are going to be many companies that overspend and overinvest and get themselves into major trouble. And it's already happening. It's just a matter of when will the market recognize it. As long as liquidity is flowing in general and earnings for these companies are still solid, I think it'll be fine. But you're already seeing a flattening out of things like free cash flow, even though earnings per share and net income continue to go higher. But history says incomes, net incomes, and earnings follow free cash flow. Because eventually the spend, you'll have to capitalize it. You'll have to depreciate it. And that is a hit to earnings. And then the circular nature is very similar to what we saw in the 90s, from Neuratel Networks to WorldCom, et cetera. So that's my general take, is it can keep going in the short term, but we all know where this leads, to much, much lower prices for a lot of these names. It's just a matter of who's in the wrong here. I think probably NVIDIA is the one that's in the biggest crosshairs, because to spend $50,000 per each one of these processors, they could do it, but not at the volume that they're doing now. But there are many other names from CoreWeave, et cetera, that are just misallocating capital in egregious ways. And it's just a matter of the tide going out, and then we'll see who's swimming naked. And I'm sure a lot of them in the space are.
All right, let's drop in another listener question now.
Recently sold a house, and what I'm doing with the proceeds of the house is I've decided to buy corporate bonds and hold them to maturity. Merrill Lynch has a secondary bond market where I buy bonds from people who already owe them. And my question is, when I look at the bonds available on the secondary market, can I trust basically that whether I'm paying above par or below par, and after I pay accrued interest, can I trust that if I just hold that bond to maturity? And if not, can you tell me what to look for when I'm shopping on the secondary market? Okay, thanks very much.
So you can never fully, quote unquote, trust that a bond is going to pay back the par value at maturity, right? That is an inherent nature of the risk, the credit risk of owning a bond. Now, how do we mitigate those types of things? Well, one way to do it is to look for one with a shorter maturity. Now you're going to get less of a return, but that's because you're only getting compensated for the risk that you're taking on. And so a shorter time to maturity bond means there is less time for issues to happen where the company can't pay you back. You look at the credit rating. You are going to be compensated more for taking on a less creditworthy entity's bond. Now, right now, credit spreads are very tight, meaning that you shouldn't want to take on that additional risk because you're not getting compensated enough. And so if you, in summary, are looking for a way to get bond exposure, you want to buy individual bonds, but you're worried about not getting that money when it comes to maturity, you really want to focus on looking at the credit worthiness, the credit rating of the company, and the amount of time left until that bond matures. Thanks for the call.
Now, every day we receive questions from the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Here's one that came in earlier. Lindsay says, what are your thoughts on the short-term rental market? Are there good opportunities for investments in short-term rental properties out there, or is the market too saturated at this point? Now, the first thing you have to understand about every real estate market is that it's localized. Now, there are general trends, and generally, the real estate market is slowing. But there are pockets of, like in Denver, for example, Austin, Texas. These are markets that are very weak. Other markets, not quite as bad. Now, when it comes to short-term rental market, I'm very weary of that market, mainly because it hasn't really seen a true recession. The Airbnb, VRBO market, it was really in its infancy in 2008-9, right? I don't even know if it really existed at that point. Didn't really start taking off until, the mid-2010s. And if you buy at the right price and you buy in the right locale, there's not a lot of competition, you can make very good returns, but it's also kind of a headache. I've talked to friends, family that have these type of properties, and it's a lot of work. It's its own little business. It's basically a bed and breakfast. So that's what Airbnb stands for, right? It's air, bed, and breakfast. It's a lot of work, and you can get good returns, but you need to have the time and the discipline and the know-how to manage these properties. And then there are regulatory issues locally. Sometimes they change the laws and the rules, and that can hurt the value. You're seeing that, I think, in Palm Springs area right now. So are there opportunities? Sure, but you have to do your deep research and make sure you buy right, both on price and the right locale.
You are listening to an Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. When you tell your friends about Invest Talk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing, from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com.
This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh in North Carolina. I had a question. I'm going back through Steve's book on investing, and around page 13, he talks about the VIX. And I track the VIX along with my other stocks, and he was talking about how the VIX can be used to signal might be time to purchase or sell a stock. I'm a little confused on that. Could you guys go back over that at some point on your show and just discuss the purpose of the VIX and maybe a few examples of what those numbers might trigger? I know they're relative values, but I've been listening to some other podcasts hearing One or two folks mention the VIX these days just as a signal that the market may be getting ready to change, maybe getting ready to slow down or something, not sure. But if you would, enjoyed reading about it in Steve's book, but just need a little bit more clarification on how to use the VIX. Thanks a lot.
Great question. And certainly there needs more context since Steve wrote that book a long time ago. But the Institution of Volatility, Vol Selling Funds, shall we say, has kind of changed the dynamics of the VIX a little bit. I'll dig into that after I give you the broad overview. The volatility index is simply a put-call ratio, how many puts versus calls are being traded. And when it's elevated, it means that a lot of puts are being bought on the market. And that means there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of people trying to buy protection. Usually when that happens, well, the market is set to bottom, right? It means that when you get a spike in the VIX, there's a lot of fear and, you know, you buy fear. You typically sell greed. And that's what the VIX index is helping with. Is where are we in the fear and greed type of spectrum? That's why when the VIX elevated, you know, 30 plus, that's usually a time to really, really buy in and add, you know, to get some cash from your portfolio and buy some positions, especially those that have been on your watch list. Now, with the volatility funds, you know, there's a lot of people going out there about selling zero DTE, day till expiration options, and really trying to bring in income into their portfolios and the strategies. And there's a lot of now ETFs that are running those type of strategies. You saw this blow up a few years back. I'm trying to remember when it was. I think it was pre-COVID when you had volatility just explode and a lot of these went to nothing. What you see now is that every dip not only just being bought by the average investor, but that volatility is being sold, and that actually suppresses volatility over time. And it's actually kind of skewed the signal of the VIX because it's becoming more suppressed than it probably should be because of those vol selling funds. That's why you see the VIX now hanging around the mid-teens. You know, usually the low 20s was where it was trading at many years ago before these vol selling funds. And now we're once again hanging in the mid-teens. You know, it's really about when does it spike? And that's really the best signal, right? The recent spike in April went up to 50, about 60, right? And so a signal that, you know, you want to be buying a bit into the market. So that's the way you want to use it. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Just a quick question on crypto. With the recent drop, is there a point where you would add a position to your portfolio? I have no crypto exposure, so something small in the, you know, 3 to potentially 5% range. Is there a point where you would start adding that? And then would you go with something like the iShares Bitcoin ETF, iBit, or would you lean more towards Ethereum with iShares ETHA? Would just love your input and recommendations. I look forward to listening on the podcast. Thanks.
I could go on for an entire show about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin specifically, what has been happening with it, volumes over the past 5 years. And we actually had this discussion in the office with one of my colleagues. And, you know, I was saying that holding Bitcoin at a small weight, your 3 to 5% weight of your total portfolio, is a good, or not necessarily good, but a reasonable risk-return decision. But you have to understand that crypto, just like anything else, but more so crypto, is driven by flows, right? You saw what happened when, okay, we have it on DeFi, meaning that people are holding it in decentralized wallets, right? And so you had the highest conviction buyers. As time went on, you got that exposure to more lower conviction buyers that weren't the original Bitcoin maxis, but still pushing prices higher. And then ETFs come in. Now you have a lot more retail money pushing prices higher. Then institutions started buying a bit, pushing prices higher. And the whole point of what the crypto lobby was trying to do was to get governments buying it because that is such a big pile of money. And so it's predicated upon more and more money coming into this system. Now, Bitcoin, crypto, has never gone through some sort of financial shock like we saw in 2008, right? And even post-pandemic, you still haven't seen volumes recover, which is my way of saying it's difficult to say what is a good price for Bitcoin. I don't know. It is a purely speculative asset. There's no cash flows that are coming. There's no return to investors. The price is purely what somebody's willing to pay for it, and nothing else is coming your way. So I struggle to say now's a good time, here's a good time, because it could head meaningfully lower. It could head meaningfully higher in a way that it is kind of difficult to see the fundamentals because it's the ultimate long duration asset. There are no fundamentals here, which is why I say having a 3-5% allocation is reasonable given the risk reward trade-off, but trying to understand what price action is going to be in any given time period, very foolhardy endeavor. Thanks for the call.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, I love the show. I got a quick question about 401k investing. My company offers a pre-tax allocation that I can invest in. I know what the difference is between a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA, but could you tell me what the difference is between a pre-tax contribution versus a Roth IRA? Thanks.
Pre-tax is just simply a contribution to a traditional 401k or IRA. That's what it means, is you didn't pay tax on that money. Pre-tax. Because you're writing off that contribution on your taxes. That is a traditional IRA or 401k contribution. A post-tax is a Roth contribution, whether that's a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k. Now remember, the only thing that matters, I'll say the only thing, mostly what matters is what's your tax rate today versus in the future. If in the future you're going to have the ability to do Roth conversions, or maybe you'll make less money for whatever reason, then you want to wait. You want to put it into pre-tax and then do conversions later if you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. But if you're in a relatively low tax bracket today, you think you're going to build wealth over time, you're going to have huge, I don't know, maybe you're you own a business, or you have a bunch of real estate that you're going to get income from in retirement, whatever that is. If you're going to be in a higher tax bracket well into the future, well, a Roth contribution might make sense. So it's about being strategic. You do want to look for ways to get money into a Roth IRA, but you want to do that at an advantageous tax rate. And here comes a YouTube comment. Richard Mortensen says, court documents reveal First Brands Group had 1 to 10 billion in assets and 10 to 50 billion in liabilities. Tariffs may have tipped this company into bankruptcy, but my opinion is that it was a poorly managed company. Your thoughts? Yeah, there are plenty of poorly managed companies out there. And when you get into a situation of policy volatility, you are going to uncover businesses that took on too much debt, too much leverage. And in the private equity space, there is a ton of that, an absolute metric ton of poor lending, businesses that were overlevered, that are tied to physical products, to business models that are reliant on importing from abroad. And those businesses are having a horrible time in many instances. And First Brands was just bigger, and therefore it had more tentacles. It had a lot of banks that were exposed, not just UBS, but many others. And so was it poorly managed? Yeah. That doesn't mean that tariffs weren't a big factor in what happened with their business. Now, you could look at Tricolor as another example. Poorly managed, took too much risk, but the whole industry kind of took too much risk, and they were just trying to compete. But once again, that's what happens when you get an economic situation that is deteriorating. The tide is going out. That doesn't look like it from asset prices, but underneath the surface, the broader economy is weakening. Like I said, we're in the 8th or 9th inning of this. Can't keep going. Doesn't mean that we have to tip into recession tomorrow or next week or even next month, but it's probably next year. And these are signs of that.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial. InvestTalk listeners and KPP clients alike are invited to take advantage of the many products and services of KPP Financial. For example, the InvestTalk radio program and its podcast replays, the new online training experience, InvestTalk Academy, and the KPP Premium newsletter distributed to subscribers each Friday. Learn more anytime at InvestTalk.com. The phone lines are open now, and you can call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Dan from Walnut Creek. And I was listening to your show on the podcast where someone called in about purchasing stock for the Atlanta Braves. And I know the Green Bay Packers also are publicly traded, and there's probably other sports teams as well. I thought it'd be kind of cool to give this something like this to my boys. It's kind of like you said, a novelty type thing. But I'd like to give them something physical, like a certificate showing how many shares of the stock that they'd be receiving. But I'm not too sure if that's possible. Can you share your knowledge on this, please? Thanks very much. Bye.
This is a great question. Yes, you can get physical stock certificates, but you do have to pay a fee. So you need to talk to your broker. Depends on the broker. The fee can range anywhere from $50 to as much as $500. And not all stocks are eligible. So yeah, it's a process. You know, back in the day, I used to buy a stock. They automatically mailed it to you. You automatically got it. Now that's no longer the case. So it is possible. And to be frank, I do think it's still a novelty, unfortunately. And when I say a novelty, I'm not talking the certificate's obviously a novelty, but the publicly traded sports teams, you know, they're going to ebb and flow. Most of them, they're not paying dividends. And unfortunately, there's probably a lot of people that are like that, that just want to buy it for the novelty and say, hey, I own shares in the Atlanta Braves or the Green Bay Packers or whatever. And I don't expect them to be, well, let's say this. I expect long-term for them to be generally good investments, but they are going to be very volatile. Those are the type of names that have questionable near-term profitability, that don't pay dividends. Those are names that get sold when times are rougher. And so you have to be aware of that and you have to be okay with that. And maybe having the certificate in a drawer, maybe on the wall, that's a perfect setup for not having to worry about that volatility. So that's something to consider as well. So keep it a novelty. Don't get too overexposed to it, no matter how much you love the team. Maybe you love the Atlanta Braves or the Green Bay Packers or whatever. It's just not an asset that's going to enhance a portfolio in any major way.
This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a live call. Malcolm from Los Angeles wants to talk about the market.
Hey, thanks for taking my call here. Yeah, I had a question about PE ratios.
Okay.
I was talking to a friend of mine who works in finance, and he was showing me the latest trend in like PE ratios and basically saying that if you follow the volatility, the PE ratio, you can kind of predict when the market's going to go up and down. And that seems like oversimplification. And yes. I just want to get your guys' take, because I feel like when you're predicting what the market's going to do in the future, there's more to it than that.
Yes, absolutely. So what you're talking about is a valuation measure. It's one valuation measure. It is a flawed valuation measurement, the P ratio, because the P is the market cap. It doesn't include the debt that these companies are holding. And then the E is earnings per share, which can be manipulated by accounting gimmicks and things like that. So it is flawed in its own way. And frankly, P ratios are an absolute, you should never look at a P ratio to tell you where a stock is going to go in the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months. It is almost completely irrelevant. Far more.
What about the market?
Even the market as a whole, because it's all about liquidity. If banks are lending, if there's more money in the system, money will flow into risk assets. If the opposite's happening, money flows out of risk assets to plug the holes in the rest of the system, the lack of liquidity in the rest of the system. Simple as that. Now, that's oversimplification, But that's way, 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 way more impact than what's happening, going to happen in the market in the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months than the P ratio. The P ratio is almost completely irrelevant. Now, over a 10-year period, yes, it does have predictive power. But over a short to medium term time frame, it has almost no predictive power whatsoever. It should be completely ignored, especially on a market level. Do you understand that?
Yeah, because he was telling me, he's like, I'm moving my clients into a defensive sort of position because, you know, the PE ratio is up, and you can see that the S&P tracks the PE ratio pretty closely if you look at like maybe a 30 or 40 year time period.
The PE ratio has been elevated now for a while. So if he's using that, he should be put his clients in cash a couple of years ago. And he would have missed out on a huge rally. Why? Because liquidity is still abundant. Now, once again, it's getting less abundant. It's starting to turn, but we're not quite there yet. And we're getting a Fed that's going to embark on an easing cycle that's going to, even if liquidity is becoming an issue near term, they're already talking about ending QT and lowering interest rates and creating that next bout of liquidity entering the market. And the yield curve steepening, so it's going to incentivize banks to lend more. And so these are aspects that, at least in the near term, are probably more tailwinds to liquidity and thus asset prices. Now, when that turns, and if P ratios are high, then there can be a bigger drop, because usually what happens is when markets are going up, everyone ignores the valuation because, hey, I'm making money. Keep it going. When things turn and now the markets are trending down because liquidity is drying up, then they start to become valuation snobs. And then they care, oh, well, hey, now that's trading at 40 times earnings. It was at 50, 40, 40 is still expensive. This could go down to 20, I'm going to sell. So it does create more gravity when the market does turn, but the market could go up another 20, 30% before it actually turns. So do not use P ratios to time the market. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible way to time the market. Now, can the market turn and can we start going through a topping process right now? Absolutely, that's possible. But that's not because of P ratios. That's because liquidity dynamics shift. And I've said this before, we're in kind of the eighth inning. I think we're now in the bottom of the eighth in this growth cycle. And we're probably gonna go through a little bit of bout of volatility near term. Could it be the ninth inning soon? Maybe. But we're not there yet.
Looks like we got a live call. Jarek from Halifax in Canada. You got a question about oil?
Yeah. Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking at oil. Just wondering if now would be a good time to get in. I hear people like Rick Rule and stuff like that saying it's a good contrarian play and good to get in some of these stocks and some of these names when everyone else hates them. Just wondering what your take is on maybe some of like the big oil players like Exxon or Shell, what the headwinds and tailwinds for those would be at this time.
Yeah, I think it depends on your investment horizon here. So we own some of the big guys in some of our strategies and a couple growth plays within the oil space. And, you know, you still have global oil demand is growing, albeit a bit slower. Geopolitical risks could push prices up a bit. You're starting to see upstream investment falling as well, which could limit long-term supply growth. All things that are in the long term, good for oil prices. But as a short-term trade, certainly would not advise it. Risk is pretty elevated. Supply growth is still outpacing demand. You know, many forecasts are showing oil prices could fall within the next 1 to 2 years. There's some economic headwinds. You're getting deteriorating macroeconomic conditions. And all these things, the biggest one being that oversupply, don't really bode well for the short term for oil markets. So, you know, in the long term, oil is the lifeblood of an industrial economy. For some time, it certainly will be a big part of that. And if your investment horizon is long enough, I think at these prices where oil's really had a rough time and a lot of factors, a lot of headwinds, for the long term, it can be a good investment. But in the short term, I think it still has some issues it's facing. Thanks for the call.
Okay, great. Thanks, Luke. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor, Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
I had a question about my portfolio. So I'm 31 years old, and a few years ago I read a book by J.L. Collins that advised people to just stick with VT Sachs, a mutual fund with Vanguard that is comprised of over 300 stocks. It is currently about 60% of my portfolio, and I'm a little concerned because after reviewing it more and more, I had dollar cost averaged into it, but it's about 38% tech. And right now it's doing great. I'm up at least like 50 to 60%, but obviously we're at a high point in the market. I don't want to push myself into a higher tax bracket by selling off because I don't have some losses to offset the gains, but I'm just curious what you would do here. As a young investor, you kind of just hold it for like the long term, or would you still take profit in this case, even if it means possibly raising your tax bracket? Thank you very much. I hope you have a great day.
Great question. A lot of people are in this situation. It's one of the reasons why we now have what's called direct indexing, which helps clients like you kind of diversify without taking the tax hit. But if you're not doing that, I do think this is a time to start diversifying. You know, gold's a good example, right? Gold's been doing very well. And these Vanguard funds, they don't have any exposure there. I think diversity definitely helps. And diversity amongst asset types is very important because right now gold's crushing equities. And there are long periods of time where gold absolutely does much better. In a period now where geopolitical concerns are rising, I think that's one of the big reasons why gold is going up. It's signaling to the market that there are problems, not just economically, but politically worldwide as well. Now, should you take a huge tax hit to do that? I wouldn't necessarily say that. I would do it prudently. You know, I think it's one of the big mistakes most people make is by avoiding taxes, they don't prudently allocate. They say, I don't want to take the tax hit. But usually what happens is they hold on too long and then bad times happen. The market turned and now those gains are drastically reduced or sometimes they disappear completely. So paying taxes, Steve always said this, they're good problems, they're bad problems. Paying taxes is a good problem. It's telling you that you made money. It's a good problem to have. So you don't need to go overboard. I wouldn't push your whole income into a new tax bracket, but maybe staying within your current tax bracket and take that level of gains right now and then do it again next year because we are, you know, approaching 2026 now and start to diversify strategically, slowly. You don't have to do it all at once. And that's one of the issues most people have is they think everything's black and white. Well, the reality of the world is there's shades of gray. The world is shades of gray. Anybody who views everything as left and right or black and white or yes or no or up or down, you're missing the real world. The real world operates somewhere in the middle. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. And so I don't like, you know, that you talked about that book. Just put it in VT or whatever. I forgot which one it was. You know, I think that can be great for an equity slice allocation. But if your eyes wide open and you understand history, you know that well, equities should be probably the largest chunk of allocation, shouldn't be the only chunk of allocation.
Let's keep things moving and play a fresh listener question. Came in on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. I'm calling in from Orange County, California. And I have a question about converting a traditional IRA to a Roth. And to start with, I'm 60, so I'm not worried about the 59 and a half rule. But I am curious about how the five-year rules work. Is it true that I can take out the original amount at any time, but I cannot touch the earnings? Anyway, any information you could provide would be great. Thank you.
So that's a great question. So the five-year rule for Roth conversions says that each conversion has its own five-year clock before you can withdraw the converted principal penalty-free if you are under the age of 59 and a half. Now, the clock doesn't start on the date that you make the conversion. It starts on January 1st of the year you made your conversion, not that actual date. The rule only affects the 10% early withdrawal penalty on converted amounts, not taxes, because when you're doing this conversion, right, the whole idea is you take from your traditional Roth, you're paying the taxes, and then you convert it. Now, once you hit that age of 59 and a half, the five-year conversion rule stops mattering. Only the separate 5 years since your first Roth contribution rule applies for tax for those earnings. And it determines when your earnings, not your contributions, can be withdrawn tax-free from your Roth. So again, if you're over 59 and a half, that rule only applies to the first contribution year. And similar to that general five-year rule, it also starts on January 1st of the year you made that first contribution. So, you know, understanding kind of the benefits of converting from a traditional into a Roth and understanding that age requirement there can help navigate your distributions. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
My five-year-old son and I listen to your podcast every night, so thank you very much for putting it on.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. Today, my question is about cash management. I'm about 15% cash, and I just feel like it's not doing anything for me. So my idea was to increase my position in one of these derivative income ETFs that sell call options and have the high dividend, of course. And then imagine a year from now, the markets have gone down a fair bit. I would just sell my position in one of these ETFs, and then I would buy the indexes and then hopefully ride it into the next bull market. But now I'm having second thoughts because I've listened to what y'all have been saying to be careful about these derivative income ETFs. So any guidance you could provide would be great. I just want to be prepared for when the markets come down a bit. Thanks for all you do, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
Great question. And I like that you are embodying our warning that these derivative ETFs are not all they're cracked up to be. That yes, they might make it look like they have these huge yields, but what you need to focus on are the total returns. And sometimes that can be good, sometimes not so good. So do not, when you're looking at these derivative ETFs, focus just on the yield, because it's not really a yield. It's not. A lot of them, if you look, the prices decline and they're giving you your money back in many instances. So your total growth of your portfolio is not double digits. So if you think the market is going to pull back cash, and you know, you probably want it in something that's yielding something decent, like a short-term treasury fund or a high-yield money market fund, something like that. So make sure it's in something like that. But if you think the market's going to pull back, these high yields or these derivative ETFs are not going to help you. Most of them are covered call ETFs. And if the market goes down 20%, are you going to go down less than the overall market? Yes, but you're still going to go down. Do not think that they're a panacea. They are simply vol dampening. That's what it is designed to do. Now, they're going to use, and this is my issue with the SEC, is they're not kind of cracking down on the things they need to in order to protect and inform the average retail investor. They're allowing these funds to quote some big yield when the reality is it's not real yield. So I would just keep the cash if you were trying to capitalize on a market downturn in the next year or so.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. C-H-A-R-T. This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
My question was how you guys determine when you say that a company has a lot of debt or doesn't have much debt, how do you determine that? Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a great question because I think there's no simple answer here. So one thing you can look at is what is a company's long-term debt relative to its equity? How much is a company paying in interest relative to its earnings before interest and taxes? The capitalization definitely matters, but what servicing that debt costs matters as well. A company that has a loan out for 60 years at 1%, but it's the same amount of debt due next year at 10%, those two things aren't the same. So it's not just the amount of debt, but the maturity of the debt, the interest on the debt, what that cost is actually going to incur to the company. And you can't really just look at it in isolation either. Different industries have different natural, if you will, levels of debt necessary. Utilities, a lot of debt. New companies could have debt. Energy companies can have a lot of debt. Telecommunications companies. So you have to look at it within the context of the industry and the sector as well. But understanding the best way to look at this can help you stay away from companies that put you in indebted peril. Thanks for the call.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I actually have a question about a 529 plan. I am preparing for the future, single, but I already have one 529 plan available. I'm thinking about opening up another one because what I would like in my life is two kids. So I'm trying to think in advance. But my question is, with this 529 plan that I already have, I see that I'm having very low growth, about 4.4% year over year. And obviously compared to the stock market, the S&P 500 index seems like it's over like 10%. I might be suffering from FOMO right now, so I will admit that. But in that individual 529 plan, it seems like it's mostly bonds that I have and a little bit of the domestic and international stocks. If I want to have a second kid, I'm thinking about setting up a 529 plan for that kid. Should I just open up a regular brokerage account and then just invest in like a Vanguard ETF rather than an individual 529 plan? Because it doesn't seem like that much promise in growth. And then the last question is, okay, let's say I don't have any kids at all. What is another way to kind of use this money too? Because I know this is really for education-wise. So looking forward to some help and have a great day. Bye.
Well, first off, you just may be in a bad 529 plan. There's 50 in the country and you can move it from one state to another. And you first probably want to just look at the options within your 529. So what it's in now doesn't, this just doesn't mean that that's all you can invest in. I can almost guarantee that you have options that are just investing in the S&P or the broader market. So that's what you should look at first. If you're looking to get market performance, well, I can almost guarantee you can get that. You just have to go and change the investments within your 529. I'm not saying that's the best option, but it sounds like that was what you are looking for. So I would start there and then maybe think about opening another 529. Now, if you don't have another kid, I don't think you want to do that. You don't want to bank on that. Life changes in mysterious ways sometimes. So I would go about it that way. I'd be patient and change your investment allocation within your current 529. Thanks for the call.
This is Daniel in Tennessee. Really enjoy your podcast. And I had a general question for you. When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, I was curious if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it, or should I just hold on to it since I already own it? Just kind of curious for your perspective there. Thank you.
Well, it depends on your time horizon. You know, when we're looking at a company, we should look at F5, for example. She already owns it. You know, could it go down to 220? Sure. But just because I have a price target where there'd be good support doesn't mean it's actually going to get there. It just means that there, you know, when you're reading a chart or anything like a chart in general, this is something that is more of an art than a science. It puts the odds in your favor, but like anything, you're not going to, it's not going to always be that way. Things can happen. You can have macroeconomic changes, broader market changes, particular companies could come out with new news and suddenly that boosts the stock or makes things even worse. You really never know, but you know, it's based on the data that I have now, the chart patterns overall, etc. So no, I wouldn't go, for example, that caller, I wouldn't go sell it just because I think it's going to go from 240 to 220 and be cute and try to get in at 220. That's why I say I would just hold it, know that there's probably some downside potentially to 220, but I wouldn't be jumping ship to get cute and capture that $20. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.